So, Mark, then Jonathan Mitchell got up to respond, and he had a number of questions on what Brian Fletcher had just said about how the bump stock works. And he said that it didn't matter one way or another if it was constant pressure or it was moving pressure, because the function of the trigger is what matters. And I thought he was pretty clear about that.
And that question was from the Chief Justice. He said, you know, there seems to be a dispute between the two sides here about whether it's constant pressure or whether there's this thrusting. Right. But you're right. I thought ultimately, Jonathan, I mean, look, if it is thrusting, it's all the more obvious that it's not automatic. But even if you accept the government's view that you're really just constantly pushing forward, that's still a manual input.
As he explained, no one's strong enough to stop recoil.
Right.
So I did think that there was an enormous amount, more than any Supreme Court argument I've ever seen, and I don't watch too many of their patent stuff, so maybe that would be it, about this factual issue.
Mm.
You know, I've never seen it, but Jonathan was getting a lot of questions on this factual issue.
He was.
And as you said before, they weren't all quite sure that you had to touch the trigger again, which and it obviously happens quickly when they're watching the video. The video doesn't really – I don't recall it showing where exactly the finger was.
Most of them don't. Most of them are from a long way away, right. But there are some that slow it down and show you how it operates, but I don't know which ones they watched.
Yeah. So that was I think, interesting in this case, that – what exactly is happening was a big deal, whereas normally in these cases it's like, oh, what did the founders write about that, you know?
Right.
And
well, there was a question about Jonathan, essentially. So, Mr. Mitchell, you make a – this might have been from Justice Kavanaugh. You make a constitutional avoidance argument, but you don't make a Second Amendment constitutional avoidance argument. You know, why not? And Jonathan's, you know, essentially said that he wanted to keep the focus on the statutory argument. He thinks we win on the statutory argument, but that, of course, there would be Second Amendment issues.
There would be such a question. Yeah. I think what he was not going to complain that this was a debate. He didn't want to say that no one could win, but he didn't want to go there because it was a harder argument. Is basically it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the argument doesn't become clearer or easier if you turn it into a Second Amendment case.
And in our brief, the real constitutional avoidance is the fact that, unlike anything else I've ever seen, when you bought one of these bump stocks, you actually got a certificate from the ATF that said this is a legal device. I mean, sometimes they issue reports and they say it's legal or it's not legal, but to give you personally this thing. And I think Justice Gorsuch asked the question of, hey, are people all reading the Federal Register by their fireside with their dog? And so he picked up on this.
Can I jump in on that, John? Because this was one thing. I thought Brian Fletcher did a nice job. I thought this was one place where he was disingenuous, because he said that the government had done everything it could to get the word out there. And I think the justices were still properly skeptical in the sort of humorous way that you were just alluding to, that Justice Gorsuch went into, to say, look, lots of people don't follow the Federal Register. They may not, you know, they may not know what went on here. But the thing that got obscured there was, do you remember, John, which day that the government issued this rule? Because I do. It was December 26th. December 26th is the day that you issue something that you don't want anybody to know about. Okay?
Boxing Day.
You know, it's so the idea that the government was going out of its way here, no. The Trump administration was doing something that looked like gun control, and it didn't necessarily want to alienate its base in doing that, and it issued it on December 26th. So the idea that they were doing everything in their effort to try to publicize this, I think, is a bit rich.
Well, particularly if you get this certificate, you bought this thing, you got the certificate, you go to your farm or your ranch in Idaho and you don't come out except to get groceries. How are you ever going to know? You're wasting your ammunition out there with your bump stock in the backyard.
Yeah.
And then you're
not on the internet.
Right,
or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even if, so in any event, I did think that was interesting. And there is that there. But the other question.
Well, and Justice Alito went into that too.
Yes.
And said, you know, what about the people who purchased this after the Fifth Circuit's ruling?
Right.
Like, are you going to go after them? Because DOJ's view is it's just prosecutorial discretion as to why they're not prosecuting everyone who, from their view, has been a felon from the moment that they bought this, even in reliance on ATF. And they said, look, well, you'd have some more estoppel arguments available to you and whatnot. Yeah. But
entrapment by estoppel.
Entrapment by estoppel, exactly. And I don't think the justices were very comfortable with the idea that that you could have something where there was an interpretive rule and someone couldn't even challenge it, you know, through the sort of normal APA process, and yet they could be criminally liable for something in this way. I think there was a lot of discomfort in that. When I think I said in the first segment, there were a lot of things that came up that we didn't talk about last week. That was the big theme that I think several of the justices touched
from
on.
Everyone, even Sotomayor, what she was trying to do is that wouldn't happen because of this other issue. And she said something else, which no one else said, which she thinks it's ambiguous, and then she wants to go to the canon. So I'm interested in what she's going to do. But I mean, I think I know which way she's going to come out, but she's the only one there who had a different way of where she was going. But I thought anyway that I hadn't thought was going to be that big a deal. And then the other question that I thought was dicey for Jonathan was Kavanaugh saying, well, you say this is how we use function. And he was kind of arguing with Gorsuch on this. This is how function works. He says, but all the language at the time, and this is what Sotomayor was trying to say, this isn't legislative history. This is something different. She's saying we're only using the language used at the time to show what the words meant, which is a different thing. Mm-hmm. And so Kavanaugh—
Original public meaning.
Yes, original public meaning. So Kavanaugh was asking us, well, what example do you have of them not thinking this is pull the trigger?
Yeah, but that's asking you to prove a negative, which it's always hard. It's always hard to do with that. You know, I mean, prove to me you don't have an umbrella. I mean, it's just hard
to do. And so Jonathan's answer was it was used, we do have that they wanted it to be both machine guns that you push a button and that you pull, and that's why they used it, which is plausible. But
It is plausible, but that brings up something that I wanted to be sure to get to on this push-pull thing, because Justice Kagan mentioned this common sense point. She said, well, Congress wouldn't have any reason to say that it's, you know, lawful to pull the trigger, but not lawful to push the trigger. And she was trying to put the Cargill side into this bind of having a non-common sense position. And I just want to clarify, the position that Cargill has is the one that makes sense, because regardless, we consider it a semi-automatic weapon, whether you pull the trigger or you add a bump stock to it and then you push the trigger, because instead of pulling your finger back, you're keeping your finger steady and pushing the trigger into that finger. Both of those, we say, are an automatic weapon. It's the government that is trying to make a distinction between pushing and pulling. And they're saying that when you pull the trigger, it's a semi-automatic weapon. But when you push your finger, push the trigger into your finger, that turns it into an automatic weapon. And I think that she had that exactly backwards on that common sense point about push and pull. And so I wanted to flag that.
Yeah. And then I think that Jackson's questions were primarily, I think her concept of this is that once you start firing, everything's happening so fast. It creates sort of a chain reaction of the body and the stock and the bullets, that can't we consider that automatic? And you really can't. But I think that goes to your idea that the films are deceiving.
Well, yeah, they're deceiving. And I think chain reaction is the wrong metaphor, because there's three things that have to happen in order for a second bullet to be fired from one of these weapons. You have to pull back with your trigger hand, you have to push forward with your non-trigger hand, and you have to keep your finger solidly on, you know, not just resting on the trigger on the trigger guard, but you have to keep it strong enough that when you push the trigger into it, that it will depress the trigger, right? And if you do, if any one of those things doesn't happen, you don't get a second shot. And I just, from someone who hasn't fired a gun, maybe they don't understand this, recoil is a serious thing. As soon as you feel that recoil, your hand that's on the fore part of the gun is going to come back. And unless you push forward, you are not going to get a second shot. And whether you're pushing forward the whole time and that's the way that you're kind of trying to overcome recoil, you will still necessarily come back and go forward. And that's just a manual input. It just is a manual input.
And what Kagan did ask was about these, what if you have two buttons? What if you have three? And
then lots of hypos.
Alito broke in and he almost said, I mean, I have to look at the transcript, but he almost said, when I was in the Army shooting these, I mean, it was that close, because he starts talking about how you have to flip the M16 switch from automatic to semi-automatic. And then you have to do the various things you have to do to an M16, like he had done it a million times.
I got the sense he might have disassembled one with a blindfold on or something at some point in his life.
So I think Alito's, that his take on this, he certainly seemed to have the most knowledge of how guns work. But he did press a little bit on this, on how it works. And
what did you think of his Holy Trinity question? Did you take that as being targeted at Justice Thomas? Had said one of his questions didn't seem very textualist, and Alito seemed to be saying, you know, good textualist, Holy Trinity.
I think that was both at Barrett, don't go away from textualism, even if you don't like these things, and Thomas, because Thomas, he had asked that purposive question at the very beginning. So that, once again, they were talking to each other, but it was quite an interesting day. And
I just want to say, I think Jonathan Mitchell did a very nice job presenting. A former Texas Solicitor General, member of the Board of Advisors here at the New Civil Liberties Alliance. We were glad to be able to bring him on board to argue this case. And I want to give full props to Rich Samp, Senior Litigation Counsel for NCLA, who was there at council table with me and Shang Lee.